The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader. Want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today's Tuesday, 10th day of July, 2012. Quick look at the numbers. The Dow up 20 points, S&P down 1, comp down 8, gold down $2.60, and crude down 96 cents. So those are the numbers. Big news today, Katie Holmes returning to the Catholic Church. in other big news, and this actually broke yesterday, but we did not have an opportunity to discuss it on yesterday's broadcast. And that would be U.S. futures broker PFG Best. I'm sure you've seen them on the internet or in magazines. They did some very heavy advertising. They were a relatively small firm by comparison to MF Global, but nonetheless, some real pain involved here. More than $200 million in customer funds appear to be missing from the accounts of U.S. futures broker PFG Best. Now, reports are also from the local sheriff that the firm's founder did, in fact, attempt suicide outside of the company's Iowa headquarters, and he was unsuccessful in his attempt. And they're not releasing, or have at least, I've not seen any articles yet that release any of the details regarding that. Now, it's been less than a year ago that MF Global blew up. When that happened, PFG Best sent out a letter signed by their founder that type of thing could not happen with them because they had taken extra precautions to ensure that the money was segregated and the money was, in fact, safe. Now, what does this mean to customers of PFG Best? Well, funds have been frozen. Clients are allowed to liquidate open trading positions, but you cannot withdraw funds or make new trades until further notice. Now, the NFA, the National Futures Association, said it issued an emergency order to freeze PFG Best operations. And it has to do with a bank account that was supposed to have $225 million in customer funds and in fact only had $5 million. PFG Best, which has brokered trades in U.S. commodities and Forex futures and options for 20 years, told clients it was in liquidation-only status as some accounting irregularities are being investigated regarding company accounts. No officials from the company at this point have made any comments. With about $400 million in segregated customer accounts, that makes them less than 1/10 the size of MF Global. So the overall fallout will be less severe, but it won't be any less severe for the individuals who are actually involved and who were customers of PFG Best. Michael mentioned this morning in the live trading room that we've had a number of people come through who have taken our free trial or possibly even gone on to become partners who were clients with PFG Best. And so our heart goes out to you, and hopefully this thing will in some way be made right. Now, one broker at PFG Best said that the founder's son, Russ Wassendorf Jr., briefed employees about the events, and his comments were doomed. One former employee of the firm said he had grown concerned that Wassendorf did not do more to distance the company from a massive $194 million Forex trading Ponzi scheme run by Trevor Cook in Minnesota, who admitted defrauding more than 700 investors. Cook is serving 25 years in prison. Back in February, PFG Best, which had acted as Cook's broker in this scheme, was fined $700,000 by the NFA for failing to notice the scheme. The company was subsequently sued for $48 million by the receiver, rounding up the assets from Cook's scheme. The NFA said on Monday that on June 29th, PFG Best Clearing Unit Peregrine Financial told the NFA that it held $400 million in customer segregated funds, of which more than $225 million was on deposit at an unnamed U.S. bank. But on Monday, after receiving information that PFG's founder and owner may have falsified bank records, the NFA said that only $5 million was on account at the bank. It also said that previous bank balances from February 2010 and March 2011 reported in excess of $200 million may in fact have been less than $10 million at those times. Now, PFG is far smaller than the big investment banks that dominate the brokerage business, but was among a dozen or so well-known independent firms that tended to cater to local traders, farmers, or smaller market players. Now, the gentleman who started the firm, he made his money and got his start back in the late 80s when he told his clients to short the financial futures 10 days before the Black Monday stock crash of 87. That's according to the company website. If you go to the company website, everything looks like business as normal, although we know it's not. And at one point, I downloaded the iPhone app from these folks. And I've got to tell you, it worked really well. So on the outside, this thing looked really good. But apparently on the inside, not so good. So that is the big news in the financial world today, and we'll see what's done to fix it, what the ramifications will be, and of course there's always more to the story, so we'll wait to hear. And with that, Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dwayne. Good afternoon. Yeesh. I am Mr. Technical Difficulty today.
So you got your monitors out?
No, we're still bad.
So they're still out, okay.
Yeah.
All right, guys, before I turn this over to Michael here, let me just point out, this is an hourly chart, S&P 500 E-mini futures. This is the Sunday night open, and as we saw the markets open Monday morning in London, price came down to test our 42-43 weekly trading zone. And then, as you can see, we tried to rally up to 52.53 but failed. And we then came back to test that zone. This is on an hourly chart. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times during yesterday's session. Again, attempting to rally. And we mentioned to look left. Right at the end of the show yesterday, I said, guys, if this thing starts to rally, look left. And you see what happened? It came right back to the weekly zone at 42.43. And then when London opened last night, it took off again, this time putting in a slightly higher high, spiking just above that 52.53 weekly trading zone. And then Wall Street opens for business, and straight back down to 42.43. So this 42.43 has been good support all week so far. And what we were looking for as we got down here today was to see if it was going to continue to give us this kind of activity, or if maybe this time it would just slice through. So far, hasn't done that. In fact, it hit 42 and then made a pretty nice bounce up to close that hour at 44.75. Now, this line that I have drawn in down here, this is sort of a line in the sand that I've put out there. In fact, I tweeted it, I think, Sunday night, that if we get below that number, which is 1340, then we could be looking at a rather large sell-off. Here's the thing. We've held and held and held and so far held. So this thing, so I think that kind of gives you an idea of the importance of this area. The market is really trying to, you know, hang on to support here. But if it breaks and if it takes us below 1340, then we could see a drop that takes us down easily 10 points, maybe a little more, maybe 15. So keep an eye on that. Watch that number. And in the meantime, we have to treat this as support until it shows us something different. Okay, Michael, it's all yours.
All right. Thank you, Dwayne. I will grab the charts. All right. So hopefully you guys are looking at... There you go. You're looking at my charts right now. All right. Man, it's just not right. All right, let me get my DOM up here. There we go. And start the recording. You guys can see my charts, right?
I can see your charts.
Excellent. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Tuesday, July 10th, 2012, and we are going to go over all the trades that set up this morning and the single trade that we took. The results, let's start with that. We took an ES trade. We are plus 7 ticks on the ES, all right? Just a little under 2 points, and I will go over that with you in just a minute. Let's start out. I didn't trade any crude today, all right? So I'm going to skip the crude, but I will go over the NQ. The NQ and the crude, I mean, they both had setups. You know what, maybe I'll go over the crude as well, just to show you the setup. All right, the NQ, let's just go over this right now, starting here at 9:30. What we're looking for here, if you don't know, the trade setup that we're looking for here on the 4-tick range charts is for the MA1, which is the blue and red line right here, to drop down below the BBC, which is this green line right here. Okay. When it does that, then we look for it to pull back up to the green line to find an area of resistance. At the time it's finding the resistance, we want to see down here the cycle telling us the long term, the larger term, is going down, and we're going to have a short-term pullback on the green line right here. On the green line, we're going to have a short-term pullback, okay? When that happens, we test the BBC and look for a down close. Once we get the down close, then we look for it to continue down, all right? So the entry would be right here on the down close. So that right there is an entry criteria, all right? I missed this right at the beginning, but if you have not taken a free trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply and take the free trial. Okay. Now, that was the first opportunity this morning. You see, we had the bearish divergence right here. We're looking for that divergence right there. And it happened again right over here. We had the bearish divergence, tested the BBC, gave a down close, and on the down close, it went down further. Over here, with the bullish divergence, it didn't actually hit the BBC here before it closed up. Right here, it hit the BBC and closed up. We had bullish divergence. That would have been a trade right there. That trade would not have worked out. I used 8 ticks risk on my NQ trades. So right there, you would have lost 8 ticks. Let's see. As the day progressed, the big down move right there, it didn't give us any opportunity because there was no pullback. But right over here, you can see it tested the BBC, gave an up close, and it moved up. And over here, let's just show you the divergence as well. Okay. Right there was bullish divergence. The green pulled away from the upsloping blue line. Over here, we had bearish divergence. There just weren't that many trades this morning. Okay, so right there, bearish divergence and the price eventually moved down. And here we're moving into the break. We had bullish divergence here, but the MA1 was on the wrong side of the BBC. Here the MA1 is on the right side of the BBC. I don't know where these arrows came from. But this was right at the break. Alright, so I will show you this right here. We had bullish divergence. The MA1 tested the BBC, the price tested the BBC, gave an up close. And so the entry would have been right there on the up close to move up. Alright, and you can see where that went. Over here, we had bearish divergence, but it didn't test the BBC. Over here, we have bearish divergence, but we have too many closes above the BBC. Alright, so there's no trade here. Alright, and that was it. It was really a slow day on the NQ. Alright, we did take our trade here on the ES. Let's go over the ES right now. This morning we had we had a couple of issues this morning getting started up. I personally had a couple of issues getting started up. Right? But right here is where we took a short trade. Price pulled up to the BBC. We shorted right there and we took profit right down here. Okay. When we took profit, I actually put my order at the plus 2 point mark to take profit. I didn't have a target on the trade. And that's why I ended up with 7 ticks. I had 1 tick a slip. Alright. So, we shorted right up here. Price pulled below the BBC, pulled back up to it, tested it, and moved down. Alright. Now what we're looking for on the 10,000 contract, you can see up here, this is a 10,000 contract, yes, is for the MA1 to drop down below the BBC, suggesting we should start looking for short trades. Then we wait for price to pull back up to the BBC. And we sell it. And there it went. Okay. Next, let's look at... Well, I'll look at the 1500 contract really quickly right here with you, okay? Right here, we were trying, or Dwayne was actually trying to short right here, when price pulled back up to the BBC. After the bearish cross of the MA1 below the BBC, price pulled back up. And Dwayne was trying to short the BBC right here. Unfortunately, it came within 2 ticks of the entry, and he did not get into it, but it went right down to the weekly trading zone. You see the zone right down here? If you don't know, these zones are distributed weekly. They're distributed Monday morning, and so, you know, we knew yesterday that this zone was here. So, knowing that on the larger time frame 1500 contract chart, the down close here would have been a spot to enter had it touched the BBC or at the BBC. There's a couple of different ways you can trade this on the larger time frame 1500 contract. Right here, for instance, on the bullish cross test of the BBC, you could buy right here at the BBC. You could wait and see if it's going to drop through the BBC and then put a buy stop on the BBC and catch it on the way up to the next zone if that's going to happen. Right? Those are just a couple of different ways to do it. Let me find my 4-tick range chart here on the YM. There it is. Alright. And we'll go through these trades on the 4-tick range. Okay, I'm not gonna go through the crude, this morning because I didn't trade any of it. I didn't even look at it really. Alright. You can see down here on the bottom, we're looking for the same thing. We're looking for the divergences between the green line and the red and blue line here, which is the cycle portion of the slingshot. Okay. There's a little bit of divergence here. The thing that I don't like about this is that the cycle portion of the slingshot is in the middle. It's not overbought or oversold. I prefer to see it overbought or oversold. Okay. In this particular case, it was in the middle, and it gave a pullback up here to the BBC with an up close and a move up. All right. It worked out, but that's not the ideal trade for me. Now, right here, we had a bearish cross and a pullback up to test the BBC with a down close right there. This right here. That's if I were to grade the trades like A through F, this would be an A right here because it pulled back up, tested the BBC, and while it was testing the BBC, gave a down close, everything stayed red. See the MA1 right here is red, that stayed red down here on the cycle. cycle portion of the slingshot, that was red. Even the bias portion of the slingshot was red. And we had a nice divergent trade right there. That right there was a beautiful trade. It was followed up by another one right here. And nothing there because the cycle, you see the cycle here is blue and headed up. So is the MA1. So on this down close right here, not that interested. Okay. Go over here. You would think because that moved down so fast, it'd be okay, but not that interested right here. All right, there's some divergence, but the cycle is in the middle, and I just said on the ES, I just said that we didn't like that, or on the ES, I said we didn't like that, and we don't like it across any markets. What I want you guys to take away from this, if nothing else, what I want you to take away from this is that we're doing the same exact trade setup on all the four tick range trades. We're doing the same setup, same indicator set, same everything, all the markets. Okay. Right over here, you see the cycle is in the middle again. Tested the BBC and moved down. Again, tested the BBC and moved down. Cycle is in the middle. We have bearish divergence across all those, but the problem is that the cycle is in the middle. Now, right here at 11:15, this right here, if I were looking for an A-grade trade, there it is again. All right. Hang on a second, Bruce. I'm just seeing your question here. How would I have traded this 6:30 a.m. down candle? What market was that on, Bruce? Tell me again. Okay. I'm going to continue with this. Right here we had the MA1 was blue. The cycle portion of the slingshot was blue. We had divergence and an up close. All right, and that was where we took the break, right in there. All right, right now, you can see right here, now in the current market, we have bearish divergence, down, down, down. That was it. All right. Oh, okay, it was with Dwayne on the one-hour chart. Okay. All right. And that, my friend, is it on the morning. The four tick range on the NQ doesn't have anything right here. On the ES, let's see, the bullish divergence and everything, we would have been looking for a long trade right here at 45 on the ES. Okay, at 45. It's had a drawdown so far, but it does have the bullish divergence right there. Okay, so the test to the BBC right here is where we would have been buying that. Looking at the four tick range over here, that's suggesting down on the YM. If we minimize that, then over here on the larger time frame, we're testing the BBC here. Okay, we're testing it right there on the 1500 contract. And I would look for that to get up here to the swing high, and there's a resistance dot printing right there. So I would look for that to get up here to 12,700, right? Now, it all depends, in my opinion, right now, it all depends on what's happening over here, okay? If this is going to bounce up, it's going to drag this up with it. If it's not going to bounce up, then it's not going to drag it up with it, all right? Then everything's going to go down. All right. That, I believe, is it on the recording. If anybody has any questions, you guys can email us at support@cfrn.net. You can go to our website also at www.cfrn.net, but you can email us at support@cfrn.net. That, I think, is where we're going to close the recording this morning. All right. I don't see any questions coming in right now, so I think we're going to wrap it up right here. All right. Recording is off, Dwayne. And
I'm back.
Watching the... All right. Excellent. Excellent. Watching the YM right here, we're moving up a little bit. Okay. If we look at it on the smaller time frame is still saying down right now. But I think going with the ES. The ES bounce here, we need to get up at least on the ES. We need to get up here to 1345 quarter, which is the MA1. That should bring the YM up as well. All right. If it hesitates there and it starts to move down, then I would think that would be a time to take profit on the YM or remove risk on the YM. Okay. And that is it.
Now, Bruce had a question about, let's see. Bruce asked, how would you have traded the 6:30 a.m. Candle on the one-hour chart? Bruce, are you referring to 6:30 Chicago time, Eastern time, my time?
I think he's meaning your time.
Okay, let's have a look. Okay, I know that you've got some challenges you got to work out with your charts, so I'll go ahead and just grab the charts back for now.
All right, thanks. Thanks. I definitely have some challenges right at the moment.
Okay. Okay, can you see my chart? Yes, you can.
Yes, I can.
Okay, Bruce, I'm guessing the 6:30 a.m. candle, are you referring to this one right here, 6:30 Chicago time, 2 hours prior to the market opening? Okay. When you ask, how would I have traded that? Let me see how I want to answer that. Let's see. First, I want to do it in my high-pitched David Williams voice. No, just kidding. And then I'll do it in my regular voice. No.
That's funny. Where is David? Is he in there?
Eh.
Yeah,
he won't come
sure
on.
Heard that.
He won't come on until I play his music.
That's funny.
It turned and took out stops and then ran down. Well, okay. So, okay, that's, now that I've blown it up a little bit, this candle here, that says 5:30 Chicago time. So this would be 6:30. Okay. All right. So you're coming out of the zone here. Now, Bruce, I got to ask you a couple things so I can give you some sort of a reasonable answer. Were you looking to trade this on an hourly chart, or were you watching the hourly and looking to execute it on some smaller time frame? Okay, because right here, this reversal right here, this was an indication that the move might fail based on the hourly chart. Okay. So you had this big bullish candle that ran, goodness, it ran from a low of 45 and a quarter all the way up to 53 and a quarter. So what did it run, 8 points? And then you get a much smaller hourly candle. You then get a reversal. And this is not a picture-perfect twin tower setup, but it's pretty close. See how this hourly candle closed right where this one opened? They both got that identical little tail right on the bottom. Okay. Just on an hourly, you might have considered trading this as it came out of the zone to the short side. But why don't we go look at it on a little smaller time frame real quick. Okay, I'm seeing now it says, I just wondered if you would have traded it. I don't know that I would have jumped in after the 6:30 close. I don't know that I would have jumped in. The fact that it got here and ran right back up, this is just, that's just some pre-market action. Let's go see what it looked like on a little smaller time frame. Let's see. Okay, let's go find 6:30 Chicago time. Okay, that's going to be right in here. Okay, if you were watching this on, if you had this chart up running, okay, price ran up. Now, right here again, we have that same reversal pattern happening on a 10,000 contract that we had happening on the hourly. Okay? Just that, those mirror images of each other. Again, they're not perfect because you got this little bit of a wick on top. But after an extended move in either direction, up or down, I'm always watching for those, and I always am anxious to see how the market's going to behave after this. Okay? Now, it came down to the BBC, which on this time frame, the 10,000 contract, is a place where we're always looking to buy the market if the MA1 is above the BBC. So on this pullback at, go back and find 6:30 Chicago time. Here I just don't have anything that would have really gotten me into this trade. Because as it comes down through here, I'm expecting a bounce here when it gets to the BBC. And so, but I also, let me say this. I would hesitate to short it into the BBC, but I would also be, or could be, somewhat hesitant to go long because I'm going to run right back into the weekly trading zone, which, although it overshot it a little bit here, it still is an, and remember, weekly trading zones are an area. So we know we had some resistance in this area. Okay. And so if I'm going to get long here, I have to simply anticipate resistance in this area until proven otherwise. And then right as the market opened at 8:30 Chicago time, that was in fact, or at 8:35, we got the high of the day, it looks like. Right at the opening bell was the high of the day. Now, if we go back and look over here, last night, price came down, hit the weekly trading zone, bounced up to the BBC, came right back to the weekly zone to the tick. Now, it's to the tick. It's a little tricky because it spoils you, and often we think, you know, we see that so often that that's how it should be, and we always have to keep going, no, it's an area, not a to-the-tick kind of thing. And you'll hear it referred to different, you'll hear some people call it supply area and demand area, a lot of different things, but I don't want to get too deep off into that. I just don't have, and I would be more apt to put a trade on this smaller time frame. Let's look really quick. I don't want to keep David waiting too long. Let me just pop over here to the 2100 and see how it looked. go to 6:30. Yeah, again, it's coming right down into an area to potentially go long. Now, did it overshoot that? Yes, it did. There was some momentum coming down, and then it bounced right back out of that area. So, yeah, okay, Bruce. Bruce says, I see you use the smaller time frame as to how to trade the hourly. Yeah, boy, you you said in one sentence what I mumbled around for the last 10. Yeah. Exactly. Looking at the hourly and then dropping down to a smaller time frame. Like here, we just bounced off of 42.43. So can we do the same thing there? Can we go look at this smaller time frame and find something? Well, we had a bullish cross. We had a pullback, which would have gotten you long at 13.45 and a quarter. And so far, it's gone up to 46 and a half. So, not a big deal, point and a quarter, but that is how I would have traded that. So, and in the partners meeting this week, we can go into that a little more in detail if you like. Iris says, how about drawing some trend lines on the hourly chart? Yeah, you can. I'm not sure where you would draw your trend line on here on an hourly chart because we've been going sideways. And these support and resistance areas here are more what I'm looking at. You could open this thing way out there and maybe do something like this, Iris. But I don't know that in this particular case, that would help you. Maybe as we get into some other charts throughout the program today with David, we will draw some trend lines, and maybe even David might have some good information to share with us. One last thing I just want to share really, really quick, because it's kind of big news, and I'm really kind of very excited about it. By the way, Robin won't be with us today. She's going to be in meetings for the next couple days, possibly the rest of the week. She will be back by the end of the week or at the latest next week for sure. But the good news is, for those of you who have not taken our free trial as of yet, you can do so by going to cfrn.net/apply. Okay? Now, you already know that you get to spend 5 days in the live trading room with us, 2 hours a day, 5 full trading days. You don't have to start on a Monday. If you start on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, you still get 5 full days. Along with being in the live trading room, you get the platform, you get the charts, you get live data for all the futures markets, from lumber to livestock, all the E-minis, the currency futures, the Forex pairs. This is live data. It's not delayed, okay? You have a simulator so that you can put on and take off trades. We allow you to utilize our indicators for 1 full week while you're in the trading room with us. And then once the trading room closes for the day, then you can continue to use the charts and the indicators on your own desktop, on your own computer, for the entire week. You can trade on the overnight, on Globex, pre-market, however you want to do it. We let you turn over all the stones, kick all the tires, so that at the end of the week, at the end of the free trial, you have enough information that you're able to make an intelligent decision as to whether or not our methodology is what you're looking for. You're able to decide if you are, in fact, a candidate to become a CFRN partner. Now, you also get the expertise of Bert and Leslie, who have been brokers for many years, but more importantly, they are traders. They trade every single day. Bert comes into the live trading room and hangs out with us. I'm going to ask you, when's the last time your broker came in and hung out with you during a live trading session to help you spot opportunities in the market. Chances are, pretty rare if ever. You have access to both of them during normal business hours, toll-free, unlimited. Burt will launch private go-to meetings with you to help you get your chart set up, your data flowing, your indicators indicating, all the stuff that I've been telling you for the longest time. You still get all of that, but now there's even more. For a limited time, if you take advantage of the free trial offer, you will also get, as a special bonus, a one-half hour consultation with the trader's coach, Miss Robin Dane. Now, this is a really good deal because, well, number one, it's free. But as you're coming in and you're trying to figure out, maybe you've been trading for a while, you've blown up an account, you've had some hiccups, you've run into some trouble, and you want to make a fresh start, you want to turn the corner, you want to do things right, or maybe you're just getting started. Not only having the experience of Burt and Leslie as traders at your disposal for a week, top-of-the-line technology courtesy of Daniel's Trading and the DT Pro platform, but to have the access, to be able to just have a nice 30-hour by phone consultation absolutely free with someone who's been coaching traders and hedge funds for many, many years, it's a great opportunity for you as a trader, whether you're brand new or beat up and battered. So I encourage you, take advantage of it while it's available. CFRN.net/apply. I apologize that I've ran long. Let me stop right now, or I'll just keep going. We need to pause for a station identification. We'll be right back with Mr. David Williams from PageTrader.com.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310 and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Good morning, Dwayne.
Hey, good morning, David. Welcome to the show. Apologize for running so long there.
No problem. And good morning, everyone who loves trading, loves to buy and sell on the markets, and try to find high probability trading setups.
Mostly they're just here because they love you.
Oh, that's very sweet. And I love being on the program. And I think the program probably has helped. This, of course, includes you, Dwayne, and other guests that have been on over the years. Hopefully that has been helpful to people, even if you're simply learning what doesn't work. Because I found out early on in my own trading when I went to got involved in trading, you know, seminars and groups and systems and things. My first, when you come home and if something isn't really working for you, or if you buy a book or, you know, whatever, and the technique or idea doesn't really work for you, at first you might say, well, you know, that was a waste of time or whatever. But in the end, you end up, if you think about it, there's always two sides to everything. You're really learning what doesn't work in the markets, and knowing what doesn't work is very valuable, because it's going to save you from doing those things in the market or putting a system together that utilizes those things. Nobody knows for absolute certain what the market is going to do. It's all a matter of probability. And the better your approach, the more robust your technique, then the higher the probability and therefore the better your results will be. And as Dwayne just pointed out, and I mean, somebody had asked a question about a particular setup, how would you have traded this? Sometimes there's no way to trade certain moves. They may lay out very nicely. They may have responded properly to the technique, the approach that you were looking for, but the trading of it may not have been simple. Sometimes there isn't a way to effectively trade it. That's why sometimes we joke. It's not even a joke. It's you know, sometimes it's just better to buy or sell the silly thing if you have a strong indication that the market's getting ready to make a move, because otherwise you may indeed have no other way to trade it. That's what happens. And sometimes you just have no way to trade it at all. Sometimes you're not encouraged enough to buy or sell the silly thing, which simply means getting in the market at the market. And sometimes you additionally don't have any other indication to get in the market as well, in spite of the fact that the market might have very beautifully done what it's supposed to do under a given set of conditions. Having those conditions met doesn't mean that it's eminently tradable. Sometimes the market is just difficult to trade, and that's just it. You just have to miss the trade or wait for another opportunity where not only is the technique working, but it's also giving you a tradable entry. And we know this, all of us know this, that after the fact, everything is much easier to see and understand and put into context. And so really in the realities, in the moment-by-moment realities of trading, you will find occasions where there really is not an adequate setup for you or for me or for somebody else who's looking at it personally, even though the setup may be very valid and is doing what the technique suggests the market should do. So really, there it is in a nutshell. That's not really a nutshell. That was more like a field of nuts. But, you know, bottom line is that it's just going to be that way in trading. And so we're always trying to refine our technique, or not only the technique of we as traders, not only the technique of having a knowledge of what the market's probabilities are, but obviously the technique of trading those probabilities and seeing what you can do with them and protecting yourself. So, you know, let me give you an example. This is something we talked about yesterday in the gold market. This is a tricky thing that the gold market has done today. When I brag, you'll know I'm bragging. This is not a brag. The forecast was for the market to go from 1576 to 1574 in that area up to 1592, pull back, and then continue on up to at or near 1606. Today, the market pulled back and then had a nice move up and got to 1602. So now, let's just say that you had been long. Let's just say you
now,
were in this trade.
Which market are you on, Dave?
I'm sorry?
Which market are you on?
Oh, we're on gold, and this is the August gold.
Okay,
my point in bringing this up is to say that the high probability portion of the trade began, the market began to move, but you do have to still protect yourself because the market got to 1602 and reversed, period. Those are the facts. And under normal, and it still may, maybe over the next day or so, we'll see higher prices and it'll complete. It's possible, certainly, that this is, and it's intended to be a multi-day thing. But in spite of that, you're in a trade. You have to manage the trade. You have to manage not only the upside, but you have to manage the downside. So getting to 1602, maybe some people got out with some of their profits. Maybe they didn't. But certainly when the market gave this reversal that it gave today, which is a pretty sizable one, and it continues, you have to manage the trade. You have to manage the risk side of it. So beautiful setup, beautiful near completion. And yet, how easy was it to trade this? The start of the trade was easy, and the end of the trade, you most likely would have been stopped out. Not 100% sure, depending on how you entered, where you entered, etc. But I'm thinking at this point, most people would have to have been stopped out of this trade. So the difference between the see here's what happened and actually trading it can be quite there's quite a gulf between those two. So the management of the trade, the actual physical trade, the being in the market, the management of that trade is a skill set, is its own world. And knowing or having a very good probability of what the market's going to do is its own world. These are two worlds. And if you can get those two worlds to somehow meet, get close to meeting, then you really have the full skill set. And that will put you in a position to be able to do what any professional trader does, which is to look for high probability setups, have the market respond according to your insight into it, and then also be able to actually put the trade on, and sometimes not put the trade on, or sometimes be stopped out, like what happened with the gold position here. Speaking of the gold, if the market does firm up later, and give us a signal, we would take a secondary signal on this same setup. Under normal conditions, the gold market would advance from 1576, late yesterday's low, first to 1592, which it did, and then a pullback, which it did, and then a continued move up to 1606. That's what it would do normally. And along the way, it showed a pretty good reversal today. So even if we end up being, even if tomorrow or the next day the market goes up and completes the multi-day move and gets to 1606 at or near that level, the trading of it is a whole lot different than the calling it. And anybody can come up after the fact and say, look, the market ran to the numbers. And on one level, that's impressive. On the other level of trading it, you have to be alert and you have to be ready for anything along the way and have a plan. And don't change the plan. Know why you have a plan. If you have a good understanding of why you're doing what you're doing, you'll have a much better probability of doing it. If you're just doing things because that's just the way you do it and you really don't know why, the whys and hows. I mean, a lot of people act that way. A lot of people do, if you think about it, a lot of the things they do without really knowing why they do it. I mean, in your ordinary everyday life, people do things without really knowing why they answer questions that way and why they duck and weave when you say this or that to them, why they turn their voice up loud at one moment and bring it down at another, you know, especially the interaction between people. You know, it's a very, very interesting chess game that goes on between people, you know, human nature. And between that chess game, you know, people can sometimes become friends. Between that chess game, people can become enemies and anything in between. But most of us don't really take the time to say, why do I say that? Why do I do that? Why, when people ask me a question about this subject in my life, do I always respond this way? Why do I always feel the need to, you know, bring up this subject when I'm in front of this person or, you know, on and on and on? Well, the same thing's true with our trading. We have a plan, but we're not always sure why we do that plan. Well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get in here, and then I'm going to, if it pulls back to here, then I'm going to get out here, and then I'm going to, why? Well, I don't know. You know, it's just, that's pretty much what my plan was. And if you really have a good reason for doing that plan and you know what the reason is, there's really, really much better chance that you will keep that plan and utilize it. Because half the problem is the plans we have for getting in and out, we break. And, that's a habit that you're going to have to break. You have to trade your plan, because once you're in, your emotions and other things get kicked in, and even the least emotional among us, that's good that if you're least emotional, that you can trade it. But even the least emotional of us have the temptations to change the trading plan. And one of the beautiful things about trading is that you can have a plan, you can implement the plan, and you can say to yourself on any given day, boy, I traded my plan, but if I would have done it this way, then I would have made more or whatever. And then so therefore you change your plan. And now the next time the market does it differently, well, this time if I would have done it this way, and before you know it, you're just chasing the tail or whatever that saying is about dogs. So you don't want to go that way. You want to utilize your best understanding of what's right for you, not what's right for Dwayne or what's right for me. What is right for you in terms of risk management, comfort, risk overall how much you're willing to hold open profits without moving your stop up. You know, there's a lot of little issues here that come up in trading. How much open profit are you willing to live with? How much can you live with? If you have 3 points in a trade, does it drive you crazy and you've got to go take it? I've had that issue in my life, trading life. If you had somehow the market really runs good for you and suddenly gives you 8 points, are you just dizzy? And torture for you would be to be tied to your chair and not be able to take any of those profits and have to watch the market for 15 minutes more. What is it? You know, these are all personalized things. It would be really good. In fact, maybe you could do this with Robin. It's not 100% necessary to have somebody to do this with, but sometimes it really does help to have an outsider to go through the list of things that you're capable of doing. What are you capable of? Because you say you want to make $10,000 this month. I'm not sure you're capable of allowing the market to give you $10,000. How's that? It's not that you're not right about the trade. Maybe you are, but are you capable of allowing it the space it needs to give you what you say you want from it? Because in many cases, you can be right about the market and still cut off potential gains. I mean, obviously, all of us have been in positions where we say, boy, I got out here, but it went up another 16 points. Well, next time I'm going to do this. And before you know it, the last trade you took is the dictator for how you're going to act on the next trade. And the market now owns you. You'll find that the more you let your last trade dictate your next trade, the less successful you are. I'm not dooming you to that. I don't want to make you feel like, this is a spell or something. But you can get captured kind of like you're under a spell by changing your trading strategy, your plan, every time the last trade does something different to you so that your next trade corrects that. And before you know it, everything starts to work less good. It really works better to have a plan. The plan has to be something you understand about yourself and about why you would want to place your stop there, how much open profit you can take. Bet you've never asked yourself that question. How much open profit am I capable of withstanding? Because most of us are very capable of withstanding a lot of losses, more than we might want to admit. But the reason we're capable of holding on to losing positions, have you ever asked yourself that? How come all of us are so good in sloppy trading, in non-disciplined trading? How come we're so good at holding on to losing positions? Why is that easy? And why is holding on to winning positions hard? Holding on meaning not getting out. Have you ever asked yourself that question? I wonder what your answer would be to that question. Why is it easier to hold on to a losing position than it is to hold on to a winning position for 99.9% of the traders? I'd like to hear, if you want to, you can type it in and maybe Dwayne can answer it. And there's no right or wrong answer, but I'd be interested to see what you think it is, because I know what it is for me. And I think very much like many people do, and I think we're all a lot more alike than maybe we want to admit. We all have the same, there's no East or West in fear, or East or West in, greed and all that stuff, North or South. I mean, everybody has those same compulsions. So we're all very much alike. But it is interesting, isn't it, that holding on to losing positions is much easier than holding on to a winning position. And really, it should be the other way around. And that's one of the things we have to work on in trading, is to get to the point where winning positions are easier to hold on to and losing positions are not. And the way you solve some of this is you don't have to go to the mountaintop and go to a Zen monk to overcome your own emotions. You place a stop. That's how you make sure that you don't have to rely on some acquired insight in getting out of the market at the right time. You utilize stops so that you're automatically out, and you'll be very happy that you did that. If I could have back all the money that I wasted allowing positions to run against me much further than I knew was correct, I'd have an awful lot of money. The check would be pretty large. And I'd feel like I had won some big prize. That's how big it would be. So over time, you learn these lessons, and can you teach? Can you actually teach these lessons to other people? Maybe. A person who's really willing to put aside their own compulsions and listen to somebody who's been through it, maybe. But it's like everything else in life. You can tell your son or daughter something, and they have to go out and learn on their own as well. But you want people to learn without having to lose all their money also in the market doing silly things. So anyway, my answer to the question, why is it easier to hold on to losing positions, is that one of the most powerful traits in human nature, if you've seen it in yourself, is look how little you're willing to tolerate being wrong on any level about anything. Somebody just says the sentence to you in the wrong way, and it slightly intimates that you might have been wrong about something, and already the hair on the back of your neck is up, right? I mean, this is how it is with most people, including myself. And we don't want to be wrong. We don't want to be found anywhere near wrong about anything. And so that trait carries over very powerfully in the market. We thought the market was going to hold this one level right here, and we bought it, and then it moves down, and now we're wrong. We don't like that, and we don't want to end up wrong. So we hold on to the losing position. It's such a powerful force, the desire to not be seen as wrong. It's such a powerful force that fully adult, grown men and women will hold on to losing positions until it takes completely unreasonable sums of money from them just so they won't be wrong. So that tells you, that shows you how powerful the desire to not, A, be seen as wrong in any way, shape, or form, or B, to even see yourself as wrong. Like in the example of being a position, nobody's seeing it except you. You just don't want to let yourself know that you're wrong. You don't want to inform yourself I was wrong. You know, if you get into a little fender bender with somebody in a car accident, which is no small thing, even if it's a little thing, but the first thing, the very, very first thing that comes out of somebody's mouth when they get out of the car, what's the first thing that happens? Guilt is assigned immediately. Somebody is going to assign who was wrong in within the first 7 seconds. As soon as you get out of that car, the other guy gets out of the car. Hey, you were running straight through that thing, man. Okay, and write down. Because the first order of business in life is I'm not wrong and you're wrong. Or you're right and I'm wrong. So that thing, that powerful force, is something we have to get over, the urge to never be wrong. And by the way, if you have that urge too strong, then I can tell you that you've never grown up, because you're going to have to be wrong in your own eyes and others in order to grow. And wrong isn't bad. You just call it bad. That's what happens. I just call it bad. It's just something we learn to do at an early age. Wrong is wrong. But actually wrong, when it's not called a bad thing, is extremely valuable. It's one of the most valuable things that can happen to you, and it can put you on wonderful pathways in life. But you can get so busy trying to prove to yourself and others how not wrong you are that you're not on any path. And you're not going to get on any path until you learn how to be wrong. And so you can see for yourself next time somebody intimates or hints even the slightest bit that somehow you were incorrect. And maybe you weren't incorrect. Maybe you were just perfectly right. But look how bad it is. Look how painful it is to have somebody think that you were wrong in a situation. And that's the reason why it's hard. That's why people can hold on to losing positions. Because we'll die before we have to say, I'm wrong. Look at politicians. Look at in every area of life how powerful the urge to not be seen as wrong and not to see yourself as wrong. And if you change that attitude and realize that there's a world of incredible insight that you could have if you wouldn't run from wrong, if you would actually look into it, you could scoot down the road of life and really be onto something if you'll just learn to be consciously wrong. And that means no longer thinking of it as a bad thing, and interrupt that thought, study what is wrong, and you can get past it, and it's a wonderful feeling. And then it becomes much more obvious to you and perhaps to others as well but especially people who've gone through this process of not demonizing wrong in their own life, that how obvious it is that others do demonize it, and how difficult it is for them to do that. It's something we're all learned. We learned this at a very early age, and I learned it so good that, like I said, if I could get a check for all the times that I slipped my stop, meaning didn't have one or moved it and kept moving it and all that stuff, it would be like winning a pretty good little prize. So it's a poison. The fear of being wrong has poisoned your life. And you drink the poison every time you're unwilling to be wrong. And stop calling wrong wrong. Wrong is actually beautiful. Wrong is a teacher. Wrong is a master. Wrong is wisdom. It's all these great things if you don't call it a bad thing. And then, before you know it, you've moved beyond that wrong. And now, believe it or not, more interesting wrongs can come into your life and teach you even more. But if you are going to spend your whole life not being wrong, you are unteachable. And you're not going to make it far in a whole lot of kinds of areas where you would want to in life, in real living, if you can't be wrong. And it's not a bad thing. It's a wonderful thing. The highest and best teachings in the world are the ones that teach you when you're wrong, not the ones that tell you when you're right. And listen, there's nothing wrong with being right. Right is beautiful. But if you're being told you're right while you're hating being wrong, you're not really that right, because you're spending your life avoiding where the real good, the real gold mine is in the wrong. So that's, again, this is why it's so difficult to hold on to winning positions and why it's so easy to hold on to losing positions for an eternity, you know. And we've all done it. I've done it. Everybody's done it. And it's a bad habit that we have to work to get over. And it's definitely doable. You know, it is. I've improved my trading. I know others that have improved their tradings. And I'm a real advocate, if you want to think of it in those terms, of being wrong. I remember, I just want to say this one other thing. A couple months back, a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, had, we'd gone out, and I noticed, this is personal, but I wanted to show you how this works. And he was talking to me in the car, and I could tell that he either hadn't brushed his teeth, or I don't know what, but you've had that before where you can smell somebody's breath, and it's like, wow, that's not just ordinary bad breath. You really, you know, he's got something going on. Sometimes they need a root canal. And then I had that same experience with him again. And so finally, and I'm close friends with him. I mean, this is somebody that I, you know, I enjoy his company. So we were out enjoying ourselves, and I mentioned to him, I said, you know, you might want to go to a dentist, because I could smell your breath a couple nights ago, and, you know, you might have something going on in there. Now, that's not a good thing, obviously, for somebody to tell another person. But the thing that hurts in that, and I could tell later that night that it really bothered him, because it means he's wrong. That's what it means. It's not just that, yeah, I mean, you know, nobody wants to have bad breath. But it also has a deeper meaning. It means you're wrong. It means he's wrong. And I pointed out that to him, and it hurt. It hurt him. I could see. And he had to struggle with that. Now, I didn't do it purposely. I didn't say that to him to be superior or to anything. I told him because I had, you know, I knew that it was there, and I knew he had to take care of it, and I mentioned it to him. Anyway, a couple days later, he called me and said, I went to the dentist, and my teeth were fine, but I had some decay that they cleaned out under here, did something, whatever dentists do. And he was much happier, and the whole subject went away. Why? Because what he did is, instead of resisting it and instead of saying, well, that makes me wrong and I should never be wrong, he just went and got it fixed. And the life lesson was, now a beautiful thing can happen. He won't have smelly breath. He fixed a problem inside of his mouth, and he's completely over it because he let wrong teach him. He let wrong, and it wasn't really wrong. He just took it as wrong, right? He wasn't wrong. He just happened to have something, you know, in his mouth that he needed to take care of. But he took it as wrong. And so you can see on so many different levels, it's such a powerful force in our life, the idea that we don't want to be wrong. And I won't hang on it any longer, but your life
before,
can turn
before
into
we it. Continue, we need to pause for a quick word from our sponsor.
Oh, okay, here we go.
Concoction, do you?
This? Never.
What's so special? Rinse or gargle?
Decisions, decisions.
For 30 seconds?
Brief, but to the point.
Okay, okay. What's this? T25, a blend of patented ingredients. Now, what's that supposed to mean?
Unleash the power of scope.
I don't care what it means.
Truly an amazing thing.
There you are.
That, anyway, ladies and gentlemen, was a Scope commercial circa 1988.
It's amazing. Anyway.
So that's good to know you cared enough about your friend to tell him the truth.
Yeah.
And then he took, you know, right action. And
he did.
You know, saved himself not only potential health problems, but future embarrassment.
Right. And he had to make a decision at some point to not call what I said to him as wrong and his feeling is wrong. He just, like you said, he took correct action on it. And now he's 19 steps ahead of where he would have been had he still just wanted to defend and never find himself in the wrong. And you see what I'm saying? He would have been, it would have made our relationship more bumpy down the road. It would have made, he still would have had, you know, smelly breath. His teeth would have, you know, gotten worse, et cetera. How many things would have been still bad? It would really, but by accepting it, he took the lesson. Not that I was teaching him something, but the lesson for him, which is that this isn't, you know, he was just calling it something bad. He just did the right action, and now he's 19 steps ahead. This happens 1,000 different ways in our lives, and I'm telling you, if you take a little time and spend a little time with, you know, I'm not telling you to literally fall in love with being wrong, but if you practice this, you'll find that you can grow up very quickly. You can get past things very quickly once you stop calling wrong, and take it for what it really is, which is a teacher. Even if you're not wrong and somebody calls you wrong, what is that whole thing? Why do you have that force that's in you that doesn't want to be called wrong? It's there. It's in everybody. And it will affect your trading. And as you get better at it in other areas of your life, it also gets better in trading. This is one of the reasons why women sometimes make better traders than men, I believe, is because they're not so hung up on always being 100% perfect and right. I mean, take a look at the movies we see when Tom Cruise is in a movie. Everything is right. He never gets hurt, never this, never that, never this. It's always perfect, 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 perfect. That's why it's a fantasy, is because that's, and we all, oh, boy, we'd love to be like that, because we have a bunch of wrongs in our life. But that isn't how life really goes, and that's why it looks so attractive in a movie, because people don't want to be wrong. They want to have everything work out right. He jumps from one building to the next. He does this. He does that. Comes out without a scratch, or if he has a scratch, it heals right away into the next scene or whatever. Anyway, so it's a big subject, obviously, and you can play with that idea yourself and see for yourself where that pushes you around. I've said this before. None of us want to be dictated to by the government, but there's a much more powerful dictator in your life. Which are all these conditioned ideas about how things are supposed to be that you've accumulated, that I've accumulated, that end up causing you to be under the sway of a dictator. And it's a voice in your head, and we don't even know why we're saying it or doing it, but it just jumps right up. So something to work on, and something for you to realize that has to be improved in all of our trading in order to take advantage of these moves and trade them effectively. Okay, Duane, I think we can move on to the S&P 500, one of the strangest markets on the planet, but also one of the most interesting markets as well. Today,
or we can just listen to a little music.
We can listen to a music. Do you want to play some? I hear it coming.
Without you, I'd rather live wrong, doing right. Mama and Daddy say it's a shame, it's a downright disgrace. But long as I got you by my side, I don't care what your people say. Your friends tell you it's no future.
There you are. That was a good choice.
Hey, you can thank Bert for that.
Okay. Did Bert mention that to you?
Bert said, cue it up, Mr. DJ.
Cue it up.
And so I did.
Okay.
Now, let's talk about, for a moment here, while Bert is available and can speak. At the beginning of the show, we talked about what has happened with PFG Best, and that's, you know, the big news. Uh-huh. And Don, in the audience, said, in light of the story, any comments on how to pick a broker these days? So we've seen the MF Global thing. We've now seen the PFG Best. And I asked Bert if he, being a broker, you know, might weigh in on that. And what can people do, Bert? What can they look for, and how can they protect themselves?
I mean, as far as the protection part, you know, one might do is just keep, don't keep excess cash in your account.
Okay.
That would be one thing. So if you're not trading all of your funds, you know, just take what you, you know, keep in there what you need to comply with margins. As far as picking an SCM, which is, you know, like a PFG, MF Global, that type, I mean, you could, you really could look at how they're structured. That would be one way to do it, meaning how long have they been in the business, maybe seg funds. You can look up on the NFA, let's see if they get any baggage, you know, issues. I think PFG, they had some things going on already with Forex and their gold and silver programs that they had on their site where you can invest $50 a month and they'll invest it in a certain way. You know, there's some red flags. You know, honestly, in the end, can me or anyone else say, hey, is your money safe anymore? I'd say no, to be honest with you. I hate to say that, but it's the reality. I think if anybody said, hey, do business with us because your money is safe for sure or guaranteed, they're lying to you. Certainly after the MF Global, Revco, PFG stuff. So,
are there any particular red flags that someone should, you know, any warning signs that people should look for?
I don't, you know.
Or is it just not that simple?
I don't think it's that transparent. You know, like the question is, this is a good question by Don, because, you know, he's, you know, other people are going to have these questions. And, you know, to me, if I were looking at, like, that in that particular brokerage firm, I think anyone dealing with Forex, I don't like. I don't like the fact that they were dealing with the gold, silver kind of program. I don't like. I know their history because I've been in the business forever. And as I told you this morning, Dwayne, I almost ended up working for them 5 years ago. But when I had talked to them, I didn't get a good feeling and I walked out. So, you know, you can do your due diligence up to a certain point. And I just think in the end, it has to come down to just feeling comfortable. I mean, I don't know. That happens, you know. I don't know if there is an exact answer.
And larger doesn't necessarily mean better, correct?
Not at all. I mean, look at MF Global.
Right.
Look at Revco. So, no, it doesn't at all. I mean, characteristics of it, like OpenEcry, we use them for DT Pro. They don't engage in proprietary trading. R.G. O'Brien, it's with OpenEcry, it's just execution only. So, you know, they're not dealing with trading, you know, outside of just execution. You could look at how much money they have in their, you know, their financial statements if you wanted to go that route. But I don't know if there's just there's a black and white answer for anybody at this point, unfortunately. So a trust has been violated without a doubt in our industry in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a sad thing, but, you know, there's always knuckleheads out there.
Yeah, I think when any of the really big players attempt suicide, I would take that as a red flag as well.
Yeah, yeah. And Jerry's got a good point here. He's asked me on a chat here, is futures trading SIPC insured? No. It's not. So we trust that the system, you know, is in place. We hope that the NFA or CFTC gets their act together and they put together some kind of, you know, stricter
compliance
and put it in place.
So what was the...
I'll tell you that under my... Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, have investors been made 100% whole from MF Global yet, or is there still some overhang there?
There's still some overhang, Dwayne.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
It's a small percentage, but I'll tell you this. One or two more of these, and it may already have happened, but I think it could get to the point where it's going to force the government to offer insurance on these accounts. Mm-hmm. Because at this point, if this were to, as an example, if this turned out bad, you know, it starts out at $200 million, then it's actually $400 million, then it's actually, you know, $900 million, and before you know it, it's $1.6 billion of people's money that somehow is gone. And in MF Global's case, somehow, probably 85% of it got returned. Bert, you would know the answer to what the percentage is, but it's a pretty good percentage.
Mm-hmm. Got 75%. Returned. And there's actually some finance people out there that are actually trying to buy the rest of your 25%.
Yeah.
In exchange for, let's say if you got 75%, they may offer you another 50% of that, and in return they're hoping that they get the rest of your cash back and they keep the balance.
Uh-huh.
Is that legal? I guess it is. People are doing it.
Sure. My concern is that for the brokerage industry is that if we get any more of these, and this one itself, we haven't seen what the end of this is, but this could force the government into offering, because it's going to shake up people's, potentially shake up people's confidence in putting any sizable amount in a brokerage account. I mean, that's where we're headed. It's not a good thing, because, in the end, the brokerage industry is an honorable industry. And these people that are doing this, that come in and for whatever reason, I'd love to know what PFG thought they were suddenly doing. Here's a successful company, suddenly just took a hard right turn, hard left turn somewhere. When they make that decision, I think the investors, the people who have their money there, need to be protected. Why are the accounts not insured? Why is every other account on the face of the earth insured, but investors aren't? What's that? Why shouldn't they be? So, by the way, when you put your money in a regular bank right now, most banks still, FDIC, offers $250,000 in insurance. But you can get higher than that and you have to go to your bank to ask them about this, but I know at Wells Fargo, if you put it into a non-interest-bearing account, the entire amount is insured, whatever the amount is. So bet you didn't know that.
You can also split it up across multiple accounts, too.
Well, in one single bank, that isn't necessarily true, Dwayne. You're covered for one account under your name.
Right, but you can have multiple accounts under different. You can name accounts differently. Like you can have an account in your name. Your wife can have an account in her name. You guys can have a joint account together. You can open a third account as an LLC or something.
Yeah, I would have to double-check that. I think there's something in there that says per depositor, and you are one depositor with many different accounts.
It's actually the verbiage you're looking for is per named account.
Okay. Well, if that is good, I hope that is useful. But one of the easiest ways around it, just for people who do have money and they're concerned about it, is that you can go to your bank and ask them, because I know Wells Fargo does this, if you will forego the interest, and what is the interest you're being paid? Pretty much nothing. In return, you put it into an account, they just take the interest-bearing portion of the account away, and now the account is insured no matter what the limit, no matter what you put in there. That can be very, very useful for people who are trying to not have to have 15 different banks or 15 different accounts and all this other stuff to have to manage. So you might want to check that out. I just found that out myself because I was at the depositing window and I just happened to be reading a little card there that said if your funds will be insured in a non-interest-bearing account for the amount in the account. And I brought it to the bank manager and she says, yeah. Yeah, we'll insure it. If you have no interest coming in, it'll be insured up to whatever amount you put in. I had no idea about that, and I think that's a good piece of information for people to check out. It may not be the same at your particular bank. Maybe Bank of America doesn't do that, or some other bank. But check with your bank if that's a concern, because some people have savings and other things that they've accumulated over time, and maybe this makes it a lot easier for you to sleep at night to know that the entire amount is insured, rather than just up to whatever the 250 limit or whatever it is. So check with your bank if you've got something like that going on. And so anyway, Bert, I'm sorry for the industry that they have to keep going through this and see this happen over and over again. And, what is going on in the brokerage industry? The first 20 years that I was in this, this didn't happen but once. The only company that was bad was Refco the first 20 years. And they were bad every other week. I mean, they were all bad all the time. They were like a radio station that played the hits. They were just all bad all the time.
Yeah, and we felt back in the day confident to say, no, everything's fine, segregated account. That was important. That was our safeguard. And now you can't say it with confidence. So, so now we have to deal with the uncertainty, and it's for good reason. People should ask the question. I would.
Yeah. No, absolutely. for the most part. Billions of transactions take place a day, and everyone gets all their money. But when these things happen and they start lining up like this, I would like to see the government. The government always wants to do things and have programs and spend money, but they won't do this because investors are evil. We're trying to get ahead. Prosperity is bad for the country, so we're not going to insure your accounts or whatever their position is. But I bet you they won't do it.
Yeah. But John's got a question, which is a good question. Are U.S. Treasuries exposed or protected in a futures account? Answer is no. Usually the Treasuries, like T-bills. Remember back at the Lynn Waldock days, David, they would give you interest on your T-bills and you could trade
up
off
to 75% of that. They would give you interest on the 75% of it, yeah.
Right. Now that doesn't exist, but yeah, it's not. Actually, the T-bills are under the house name. So if you were doing business with, PFG and you had a T-bill, actually it's
owned by PFG.
Yeah, exactly. The only way really around it is if you go to the CME website, they have what's called a line of credit, and you could actually, done with certain banks, you have the relationship between the bank and the FCM, and you could have monies transferred back and forth to meet margin requirements. So a lot of our larger clients, hedge fund type clients, do that type of transaction where you keep it keep it at your bank, and then if there's any margin deficiencies, there's a relationship that goes back and forth where they take money back and forth and to comply with the margin. So that's just about the safest. That's about the safest route. And like I said in the beginning, I said, the thing that maybe something to do to reduce your risk, if you have excess cash in your account, and you're not using it, take it out. You know, what is it there for anyway? I always thought, you know, the more cash in your account, you know, the more likelihood you have to spend it. You know, mm-hmm. I know the house doesn't want me to say that, but, you know, that's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So,
on the non-interest-bearing accounts, that is across the board because it's, as far as your financial institution, it's part of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act, sections 343 and 627. However, it does say that it is temporary. Section 343 provides temporary unlimited deposit insurance coverage for non-interest-bearing transaction accounts at all FDIC-insured depository institutions. So it doesn't say right. When. Do you know when it's going to expire, Dave?
Yeah, right now, from what I read on the thing, I think it runs all the way through the end of this year, but I'm not 100% sure if it was this or next. But it is active right now.
Okay.
It is active right now. So this can be very powerful information because for a long time, you may have been, for those of you who have more than the insurable amount, you might have had to say to yourself, well, gosh, I got to open up this account or that account, this account under these different names, or if that's not working, I have to go to different banks, and on and on and on. It takes to be, you know, now you can put a sizable amount in one account, and all you have to do is forego the enormous interest that they're paying you each month in order to have, you know, completely unlimited coverage. I'll take that. I think that's a really good deal. So, there you are. So I hope that's useful information. Dwayne, are you still with us?
I'm right here.
Oh, okay. You just got strangely silent. It sounded like you were going to say something.
No.
Okay. All right. Well, as we're speaking, the S&P 500 is breaking to new recent lows today. What I was going to mention earlier, if we're off the subject of the brokerages, what I was going to mention is that just in general, normally speaking, we would expect a multi-week decline off of the July 2nd. You may recall we talked about the week of July 2nd being important. It's a reflected wave weekly top, and the market would normally have a multi-week decline. So in general, the market would want to go sideways to lower for several weeks anyway. So this slow decline today, which has shown somewhat unusual behavior, is not unusual when viewed from a larger perspective. It's normal behavior and, in fact, is driven by the larger indication. But the when, the how, and the where of it isn't always as clear. And in today's session, the market has essentially been a trend day down, just very, very compressed market movement and new lows made throughout the session. So we're breaking down to new lows now. And if we do, we do have some important levels. Dwayne had mentioned them earlier here, and I think in our panel for today, let me just see what the low end is here. The 38/36 level is the final level for today on the downside. So they are testing already, and then above that we have 40. So there's two levels that are very close together. And they're testing those levels now. So this is, of course, an important thing here. But look at this market, all day down, and very, very little bounce, attempting lower prices as we go here. So we'll let this cook here. If you don't see something that you like in this market and don't understand what it's doing, but you find yourself saying, but God, it's moved this many points, stop saying that and just move on to a market that you understand better. Because that'll serve you better over time. Okay, so let's move over real quick. Let's take our rounds, and then I'll get out of your hair here, Dwayne. And you have a lot of hair. So
I do.
Easy to get all tangled up in that. How long is your hair now, Dwayne?
I have no idea.
Oh, you don't have any idea. You live with it, but we have no idea.
I stopped measuring it after I left puberty. So
Okay. Oh, there you go. I can see that. All right. So that had to be just a couple weeks ago then, right?
Yeah, something like that.
All right. Okay, with the gold, we talked about this earlier. We had the indication yesterday for the move from 1574, 1576 up to A test or attempt at 1606. Today's high is 1602, and they reversed very strongly off that. That's somewhat unusual behavior in the gold market today as well. And so I'll be interested to see how they play this out, because we may get a second chance at this under a certain set of conditions if they exist into tomorrow. We'll talk about that tomorrow when we get to this. But as usual, my point was earlier, you do obviously want to manage your trade no matter what the forecast is, and take profits where you can, and also protect yourself, move stops to break even, or you know, let some of your profits pay for if the market comes down and takes you out. It's any number of ways to do it, but you want to do it, because things like that can happen sometimes. You can't know everything about the market. You can just know the high probabilities, and today's sharp, sharp decline is unusual behavior in the gold market. So Treasury bond market continues to advance. The yields, the difference between the yields and where the prices are right now are a little bit off. According to what somehow how people measure the yield against where the actual price of the 30-year is, the yield is actually lower, and therefore the price would normally be even higher. So there's a little bit of a divergence there. But either way, interest rates remain extremely low. Facebook, which we've talked about for last, you know, since the thing opened X number of days ago, 30-some-odd days ago, May 18th is when it opened, is moving very, very small range days. They did pull back. We talked about this yesterday. Gave us the move down to $30.45 that we had talked about being the normal move off of the high of $30.33.45. And today they're down a small amount. Nothing really big to talk about there, but interesting stock for a number of reasons. The euro, we talked about this before, the euro continues to press lower here. How this month closes is going to be very important. There's an awful lot going on with currencies right now, especially ones that are related to Spain, Greece, the euro zone, and there may, in fact, be some very, very powerful trades that we can put together with this. But because the market has shown, this market again has shown some kind of unusual behavior recently, and so we want to leave it alone until we see something a little more clear that we would like to trade. What is unusual behavior to us may be very normal to another person. They may find this market very normal. The market kind of goes around and it services different investors of different outlooks and different types, and it just continues doing that infinitely. So we'll keep an eye on that. Nothing to add on the crude side either today. The crude market, we're going to wait for a little bit longer here. We do have important things I just want to mention now that's coming up for this year, and we'll talk about it as we get a little closer in September for the crude oil market. There is a volatility cycle that is due at that point, and that will allow people who either want to sell options or buy futures, take some advantage of it. It'll be there. There's two other cycles prior to then that are going to be important as well on shorter term timeframes, but as we approach September, crude is going to become much more important for an end of year trade. There's plenty of shorter term things in crude that we can talk about. Maybe we will as we get closer to it. And one of those is coming up. Today is Tuesday, so Thursday of this week. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. This would be for the crude oil market, the November. I think November is what we're – is it November or is it –
I'm back.
What is it? August?
What is it?
August. Crude is August.
Yeah, go ahead and go with August.
Yeah, August. So looking at the August contract, we're talking about Thursday. There very well may be a trade into that date, so I want to just give you a little heads up on that. And we'll talk on this, because this is the big thing is September, but there's going to be a number of these smaller ones that are coming along the way here. So we'll talk about this as we get a little closer to it. And then gasoline prices have come down substantially, so that's been good for everybody. Tesla, let me think, what were we going to do with that? We talked about the June 22nd plus or minus a day top that came in a little bit early and that we expected a multi-day reversal down, just simply based on the idea that the market, that the company was releasing their car on that date. But having said that, the week of July 2nd is an important turning point as well, just like it is for the S&P. So we're watching the market advance off of last week's low in this stock. Don't have anything really big to add to that just now. So again, it's quite a little bit of unusual behavior. One of the markets that I am interested in now today is the soybean market, and I want to just give you a couple of little ideas that you can at least think about. Today is the one day late for a top. July 9th is the day for a top in this market. And there's two price levels of importance up here. One is $16.70, and the other one is $17.02. So from 16.70, I know these are big swings, up to 17.02. That's and a range. I'm sorry?
July pricing, David?
This is, you know what, that's a good question, because where are we trading right now?
And July is at 16.54, but we're
you know what? And yeah, you know what? And I'm looking at this on a longer term chart that has not. Actually, we'll hold off on that then. Let me, and it's not a daily top; it's a weekly. So let me say this: the week of July 9th is important in this market for a top.
All right.
So we want to begin looking at this market for the potential for a multi-week reversal after this very powerful advance up that we had.
Right. Let me add two things to that. Tomorrow you have a big crop report. Mm-hmm. So you know, you have to be very careful. The premiums in the, if you're looking at selling calls, they've really deflated in the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you get a bullish report tomorrow and they really, you know, push it up, then I would wait till tomorrow to do anything after that report, and then start, you know, maybe looking at some of the premiums on that side. Because the calls further out have really been inflated with this move. So there's some juicy premium out of them out there. But in the last couple of days, since we've been trading sideways, they've dropped pretty considerably. So my advice is, A, I wouldn't do anything before the report. B, I wouldn't sell any calls before the report.
Don't step in front of the report. Yeah.
Yeah, basically. So.
Okay. No, that's great advice. Let's let them do it. But I'm letting you know that there is something, there's enough of an important thing happening here where this is potentially a very important point for the market here on the weekly basis. So keep that in mind. We'll continue to take a look at it. This is the week. We're in the week right now, so we're only in Tuesday. So there certainly is time here, and the size of the move off this would be, you know, sizable. So we'll talk about that, and maybe may even have a roadmap for it. So that's just our roundabout take of the markets right now, Duane.
There was a question earlier, David, about corn. If you have anything, let me see if I can find the question.
And what is the month we're in corn? And what's the symbol for that, Duane? Bert.
Bert.
Well, Duane's symbol. What was your symbol for soybeans, David?
S-E. Hold on here.
Mine was ZSN.
Yeah, ZSE.
All right, so use Z-C-E,
Z-C-E?
And then use Z, David, is December corn.
Okay,
so
we're
so I'm looking at Z-C Z-Bert?
Yeah, there you go.
December? Okay. The question was, is do you think corn has topped out?
I'll tell you right now, and anybody with Reflected Wave will know this, that the month of August is the next important on-time month for a top in this corn market. So soybeans is much stronger than corn, at least from what I've seen. I'm just glancing at corn for the first time. But so one of the first things I can tell you is that August is the on-time month for a top. We're currently in July, so we have into next month, and that would be a very important period of time. And this is the 1 month early, and you would want to watch at this point for some of the critical price levels to be tested, etc. Inside this whole business of the monthly top, we do have shorter term tops on the weekly chart as well as as just the same way soybeans does. But because there is a monthly top here, the larger rules the lower. So you want to be very careful and allow them some time to put in the top up here with regard to finishing the month of July and getting into the month of August. Quite often in my own approach to trading these things, when I'm in the 1 month early on a large time frame, I'm actually often buying pullbacks for the potential of new highs to be made into the on-time month or even in the same month, which is the 1 month early. So I'm using reflected wave to buy pullbacks for further advance as the market is finishing the up move. If they subsequently show me that they're no longer able to do that and they break through key levels, then it starts indicating that it did come in 1 month early, and now I'm looking to sell rallies. So I will buy into the on-time month, on-time week, etc., and I will sell into the 1 unit early if they start to fail on the 1 unit early while I'm trying to buy it. I hope that doesn't sound too confusing, but if I have trouble with my buys, maybe I buy once or twice, and on the third time they're still on the 1 unit early and they start to break down and show some different behavior, then that starts to put me on the sell side, and I start to believe that, hey, there's a real possibility because important turns occur at important prices. Hey, we have something here that may be a 1 unit early top. That's my indication. And so then I would want to then start looking to sell with the idea that the 1 month early had or 1 unit early had occurred. I'm just laying out some ideas that of how I take the trades utilizing reflected wave to take best advantage where the highest probability of a decent move is. So the answer to that question is yeah, we do have August listed as the next important monthly top for this market. So I hope that's helpful. So there you are, Dwayne.
All righty. And the other question was, do you still expect substantially lower prices in the ES?
Okay. He's asking because we've been talking, and for the last several weeks, I've been saying that the S&P 500, although they did bottom at important levels, you know, the 1260 or 1258, whatever, we have some number down there, they did bottom at important levels, and they had a good sell-off from the March reflected wave top. However, there are other indications that lead me to believe that the market is vulnerable to a continued decline or at least a very good attempt at new lows. I still believe that. It's not an outright forecast, but I would not want to, and I've said this before and I want to say it again, if you follow what I'm saying and the market goes higher, you're going to miss that trade. But you've asked me, and I'm only expressing my opinion because I feel I have a number of reasons to believe this. And what I believe is that there's a vulnerability that is not normally present at this point. And that vulnerability is making it difficult for me to want to sell put premium or anything else right now in this market. I want to stand up, even though we've had a good advance up and all that stuff, that's great. But the crude oil market had a really good advance up just before it crashed in the month of May as well. So I'm not triple impressed by that with regard to this known vulnerability. So that, yes, the answer is yes, I still am concerned about the vulnerability. I say that knowing that if the market firms up here and is able to move higher, well, fair enough. That's the case, but that's my opinion. And I'll tell you when that dissipates, when that goes away. But I like the idea of the short side of the market, especially now that we've had a decent rally. And I'm not saying just to jump in short, but that vulnerability is still there. Once it's cleared up, then I would feel much, much better about telling you and making a forecast, hey, here's a bottom, we're going up to this level, et cetera. But at this point, we're being much more careful. We've taken off, you know, we've shown our puts, you know, our statement for the options for the last year. And by the way, that statement, when we showed it at the Reflected Wave seminar, recently we had shown it, it was at 104, 107 or something like that. And I think it was up at 130-something. At the seminar. So we've continued to book premium profits, premium meaning selling premium, in the various stocks that make up the S&P 500. And recently, we unloaded, got out of a whole bunch of them on this rally because, first of all, a decent amount of the goodness is already in, you know, out of the deal because the market had rallied. And number one and number two, this vulnerability is still there. It's staring us in the face. It's very difficult for us to sell premium on the put side right now. Now, if you have done that or if you are long, I don't want to frighten you out of your position because you should be in the market based on your own, you know, you obviously you believe something about the market, and I hope you're right because I'm not going to be, I don't have any skin in the game, so to speak, until after I see this, until I see this vulnerability get taken care of. Once it is, then I'll be much more firm on wanting to be long in the market. Just want to remind you that going back to March of 2009 when the big bottom was put in, this market has withstood more bad news in a shorter period of time than perhaps in the last 100 years of bad news. There has been so much bad news that I don't know if any other time in history, while the markets have been activated, have been active, that we've seen that much bad news from the real estate market to Europe to terrorism to our government to debt. To, I mean, the list just goes on and on. You remember what the last couple of years were like. Look how much bad news has occurred, and look what the market's done. So it's not like the market's ready to topple down, but on the shorter-term basis, on a multi-month basis, which is shorter-term in the scale that we're talking, it is, in our opinion, still vulnerable. So we have taken off the majority of our put positions, and I'll be honest with you, I wanted to get out of them before the market continued to do this advance. We held a little longer. It did work out, but that's just luck. That has nothing to do with really anything else. We were just lucky that they continued to give us a good advance, and you know, we were able to get out. So you know, luck favors the prepared, but reliance on luck is called gambling. So don't rely on luck in your trading. Sometimes luck comes to your favor, and you just say thank you very much, and it's very nice. But you continue to trade with the skill set that you have and monitoring your position and all the things that we talk about. As soon as you start relying on luck, you have now crossed into the gambler's zone. And some there's very few gamblers out there that do very, very well. Very, very few.
Hey, Jerry asked if you can share what that vulnerability is.
The vulnerability has to do with a certain type of cycle that has not completed that would normally indicate lower prices. It has to do with the spatial relationship forecasting portion of our work,
okay,
where the market has a cycle pushing down, and that cycle has not run its course yet. And until it runs its course, it's vulnerable to a fast finishing move. It's not the same kind of cycle as crude. Crude was an outright volatility cycle for the month of May. This is simply a big force that is hidden from view until price movement shows that it's there. But you can time it and you can say, well, this is when it would begin expressing that force. And so we're in that period. Part of the, I mean, the big move down from March, that force was there being expressed, but it's really not over. That's the vulnerability, is that it's not over. So we're just going to be very careful. It's a force that has not yet completed its movement. Once the force ends and ceases, it then allows another force to come in and have dominance. Until it completes, that other force doesn't have the dominance, and so you're vulnerable. So that's pretty much the best way, I think, to describe it. So and remember, it's not a forecast, it's just, it's a concern, it's what we think we view as a vulnerability, as opposed to us saying, hey, the market's going to bottom here, it's going to go to here. This is something that just, you know, kind of we're stepping aside saying, you know what, we'd rather just not mess with this until we see the timing of this complete. And at this point, I would rather just let the market play out and we'll talk about it. And again, let me kind of apologize in advance if I'm frightening anybody with long positions. It doesn't mean the market's going to go to zero. It just simply means that the downside move would have to have another thrust to complete on the downside before we have any larger multi-month movement. That's what the idea is.
David, are you referring to the 1252, 1212?
Yeah, it would at least take a shot. It would at least take a shot at the lows that we made. It would be a fast finishing type of move. So that's what we're saying that it's vulnerable to.
Okay.
And we'll see. Let's let it play out. I'm trying to give out information that I don't want to say something that would cause anybody to change their position unless it's strong enough for me to say not take a position. If it's strong enough for me to not take a position, then I'm going to go say it. And then you can deal with it on your end if you happen to be long in the markets or whatever. And if you are, I hope you've done well with it for the rally off of the last month's low. So we're just talking about finishing up the move.
Do you have a webinar today?
We do. Actually, thank you for reminding me. We have a webinar today on Messenger Pro. We have some new features in Messenger Pro that are going to come out, including a list of the stocks that I know not everybody trades in stocks, but we do. And they're very useful as a backdrop to your other trading. They're not as leveraged by any stretch as futures are, but they can be very useful as a slow buildup over time for a certain amount of equity that you have that you would dedicate to that. and there's a few other new features in Messenger Pro, but they're not in there yet. They're coming, and we want to tell people about it, show some of the things that we do with Messenger Pro. So that's today at 1:30 Pacific time. No matter what time zone you're in, it's 15 minutes after the S&P closes. So it closes at our time at 1:15, Chicago time 3:15, Eastern time 4:15. Bert Schlichter, I think, will be there. Bert, will you be there?
Yeah, I'm there.
Okay, so good. He'll be there. And he'll answer some questions as well about anything that you may have regarding what the stuff that we're going to talk about. And Bert, their brokerage doesn't deal with stocks, but at some point you may want to consider that, and we're going to be giving out some of that information in Messenger Pro,
hey,
along with some new stuff that we'll go over during the webinar. If you want to go there, you can go to pagetrader.com, and on the right-hand side of the homepage, click on Trader's Blog.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It may just be my browser, but when I'm clicking on it, it's not taking me there.
Blow the thing up, because there is something with that little fold-down page
can
cause that to happen.
There you go. Okay.
Yell at it. There you go.
Or yell at it.
So today, Tuesday, July the 10th, is that correct?
Yeah, it's today.
Okay. So I'll put the link in the chat room so that everybody
Beautiful.
Has it.
Thank you, Dwayne. I appreciate
Page
that. And Bert, I'll look forward to seeing you there later.
Control.
And the S&P, trend day down, and very quiet, very persistent. So we're just going to stand aside here for a little bit. This is somewhat unusual, and we'll let the market show us something here. But, Dwayne, thank you for having me on the program today. I'll look forward to – I hope Robin isn't going out doing any search and rescue, because it was like 113 here yesterday. What was your temperature, Dwayne?
I think it was 112, 113 here as well.
Yeah. Well, I just want to mention, I was looking on the app that shows the weather, and in Death Valley, I now know why they call it Death Valley. Why do you think they call it Death Valley, Dwayne?
Because people die there.
People die there, and why do people die? Are they murdered?
Because
are they run over by cars? Are they hit by falling vending machines?
Because it's very
roadside
hot.
Kitchen deflectors? What is causing people to die in Death Valley that they named the place Death Valley?
Because it's hot.
It's really hot.
Really
and the temperature
hot.
Yesterday in Death Valley was 125 degrees.
Wow.
I mean, seriously.
That's warm. You don't need a sweater.
You don't need a sweater. Leave your sweater at home.
Oh, gee.
Seriously, that's bordering on just the preposterous. 125 degrees. Do people live in Death Valley? Are there homes? Do you drive up and down streets in Death Valley where there's a little... houses and 7-Elevens? What happens in Death Valley? We need to make a trip to Death Valley and find out what's going on there.
When Charlie Manson and his family were ran off of Spahn Ranch, they moved to the Baker Ranch in Death Valley.
Okay.
And that's where they were finally arrested and taken into custody on unrelated charges. It was while they were in custody that they were, in fact, linked to the Tate-LaBianca murders. But, yes, so in answer to that, people do live in Death Valley.
That's a strangely informative answer you gave regarding the details surrounding that.
I was thumbing through Netflix the other day and came across a documentary, and I just clicked on it, and it was actually interesting enough that I watched, you know, the whole hour's worth of it. Because it was from a guy who doesn't look like a TV guy doing a documentary. He looked like an ordinary guy, and he talked like just a regular kind of guy. And he runs in L.A. some kind of, you know how they have the tours of the stars' homes and whatever.
Yeah, God, that's still around.
He takes you on a tour of like all the famous murder scenes and the graveyards. Mm-hmm. That's his spin on the tour thing. Just an ordinary kind of guy, and he had done a tremendous amount of research into the Manson story and all that had happened and all that had went on and transpired and stuff that was myths and stuff that were facts. And it was kind of interesting. It's on Netflix for anyone that wants to take a look at it. There's probably one documentary regarding that guy. I mean, all this many years later, and that is still a big thing.
Yeah, that's iconic. There's no doubt about it. The charisma of the mentally ill.
Boy.
Tell you what. All right, Dwayne, I'll see you guys tomorrow. We'll put it together. Hopefully we'll have some more, a little more interesting setups and trading. Bert, I'll see you a little later. And I invite anybody to come to our webinar today for Messenger Pro. You can click on that link. And I look forward to seeing you there in just a couple hours.
All right, David. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you very much, Dwayne.
See you tomorrow.
See you then. Bye-bye.
That's going to do it for us, guys. Keep an eye on this area right here. We lined it out a couple days ago as being a pretty important area. And if we break below this 1340 and hold below it, then our next stop on the downside is down here at 2829. That's a pretty nice move. So watch this. The tweet is on, as they say. And that's going to do it for us. Remember, if you take advantage of the free trial right now, not only do you get all the stuff you would normally get, live trading room, charts, data, indicators, access to Bert and Leslie and all their years of experience, you get a free 30-minute telephone conversation consultation with the trader's coach, Ms. Robin Dane. So, to take advantage of that free trial, go to cfrn.net/apply. It's that simple. If you've taken the free trial in the past and the system won't let you in, and maybe for whatever reason you didn't take full advantage of the free trial, or maybe you had a busy week, whatever the case might be, shoot us an email, secondchance@cfrn.net, or call toll free 866-928-3310, and if you got a really good story, we'll give you a second chance. Alright, thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. I'll see you at the bell.
remember this. There is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.